Professor Bravo, congratulations.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you, first of all, how all of this went down. I understand the Swedish Academy called, and you missed the call the first time around.
That's correct. I missed the call, and then I noticed that my phone was vibrating, and I went to see, and it was a call from Sweden. So I was a bit surprised, but then I learned the great news.
The great news indeed. The Swedish Academy awarded you this prize, quote, for your analysis of market power and regulation. What made you decide to study regulation, to focus on regulation?
Well, it started actually when I was a student at MIT, both with my colleague, my fellow student, Drew Fudenberg, who is at Harvard now, and Eric Maskin, who was the Nobel Prize winner in 2007, who was my advisor, who is also at Harvard. We started thinking about those things together with the professors of IO, industrial organization there, Paul Josko, Dick Schmanzi, and Jerry Osman. We had those models. In a sense, they were new tools, which were game theory and information economics, which could be used to shed light on the working of industries, about possible regulation or antitrust of those industries. We had to reconstruct the doctrine there. And I learned a lot from those colleagues, Drew Fudenberg and Paul Josko and Dick Schmanzi and so on. Then I went back to France. And then Jean-Jacques Lafont, which was the founder of the Toulouse School of Economics, came to work with me on regulation of network industries, so mainly telecoms, but also electricity and railroads and so on. At the time, we saw that there will be big changes, especially in Europe, but also in the U.S. There will be entries, so you had to give access to the entrants. How will you do that? Did you want to break up the industry vertically? What kind of access price would you have? So there were a wealth of problems that we had to tackle, and there was those new tools that I was mentioning, game theory and information economics, that help us think about those things.
You were very critical of how regulators acted, both here in the States and in Europe, in the lead-up to and during the financial crisis. Do you think the role of regulators, especially banking regulators, has changed since then? Do you think that we see the role of regulation differently?
Not really. I think there's been progress which has been made in the understanding of why we need solid banking regulation. I mean, it's kind of obvious, but it's true that the economics of banking regulation hadn't had much influence until then. Now I think people take it more seriously. People start understanding that too much political power was involved in there. We have seen, for example, real estate crisis, subprimes. It's not only the U.S. I mean, you take Spain, the same thing happened, Landesbanken in Germany. What we need is a strong state, and a strong state often has to be independent from political pressure. So in Europe, we'll have this banking union, which is going to try to do exactly that. I don't know if it will succeed. The devil is in the detail, but I think it's a good step to have a centralized banking supervision as opposed to local and understand national banking regulation.
You know, here in the States, regulators often say that they don't have enough funding, they don't have enough resources at their disposal. How big of a handicap is that to them?
It is an handicap because, obviously, on the other side, the banks or the industries more generally have very talented people who are well paid. They are very bright and so on. And this is a difficult job. I mean, you know, regulating a bank, for example, is an incredibly difficult job. So you do need to have talented people on the other side. I mean, they are, but often they don't have enough people, and that creates problem. That also creates problem, I think, if we want to extend regulation further. So you have heard about the SIFI, the systemically important financial institutions, which is a good idea to regulate, but, you know, we already have trouble regulating the banks and the insurance companies. If you extend the scope of regulation too much, then it's going to be very hard for the regulator. So we also have to think about complementary measures to make this work.
Yeah, before your work, there was this notion of perfect competition, that there were these general principles that could be applied to all sorts of different industries, telecom, railroads, banking. Why did that way of regulating persist for so long, do you think?
Well, the notion of perfect competition, of course, is difficult to sustain in some industry. It was not random, for example, that in telecom or in electricity or post office or railroads, there were monopolies. I mean, I'm not saying that you should not have competition. Actually, lots of our work has been on how you should facilitate competition. But there are good reasons. There are very large fixed costs. There are returns to scale. So it's very hard for lots of firms to enter. So, you know, in the local loop, for example, in the past was a big bottleneck in telecom. The electricity grid is a big bottleneck and so on and so forth. And therefore, you cannot expect to duplicate those bottlenecks because of the fixed costs which are involved. So what you have to do is to rather to give access to in order to create competition. And giving access is actually quite a difficult thing because on the one hand, you want efficient competitors to be able to compete. On the other hand, you don't want to expropriate the infrastructure owners because otherwise they won't invest in the network anymore and you'll end up with terrible networks.
So much of your work has to do with innovation, barriers to innovation, and that's something that's especially important in the tech sector.
Well, in terms of innovation, I mean, there are several issues. I mean, one is intellectual property, and there's a lot of work done now to try to understand how you get diffusion of technologies while protecting intellectual property rights, and that's obviously very important. Now, there are also big players, of course, in those high-tech industries, and that's also because there are large network externalities, there are large fixed costs, and you don't build a search engine like that, an efficient search engine like that, costlessly. But also a very efficient operating system, the same. And there are also very big network externalities, so you benefit from being on your network because first we can interoperate, but also we'll have lots of applications in common. So that's kind of natural. Again, you know, you will not expect perfect competition to apply in such industries, but at least you want to allow efficient entrants to be able to compete, right?
It must be very gratifying to be an academic economist and see your work applied to so many different things, to see it influence policy. Do you actively engage with policymakers, or have you just sort of sat back and watched this unfold?
A little bit of both. I'm a researcher primarily, so I don't spend that much time trying to push for reforms and the like. I belong to a bunch of committees. I've been belonging to the French Council of Economic Advisors for now 15 years. I try to help, but you know, my main role is to be a researcher and to be with colleagues and students. I'm very happy when, of course, recommendations are adopted. That goes without saying, but there's only 24 hours in a day, so...
You know, you winning this award is a source of pride for France, for many French people. The prime minister tweeted that this is a thumb in the eye for French bashers. How important has France been to your work? You being there, spending a lot of your career there, how does that influence the work that you do?
Well, I think economics is now a field which is global in a sense. So the same problems can arise in almost every country. The thing is that countries have different traditions, they have different cultures, institutions and the like. So in terms of antitrust, for example, that doesn't make a huge difference. But if we think about other things like organization of the state or labor market reforms, then there are specificities of France and Southern Europe, for example, that you have to take into account. So being in France has influenced my work, but in the end, it's really an international field nowadays. So I probably would have put less emphasis on debt crisis, on labor market reforms if I stayed in the U.S., but most of my work is completely independent of that.
Jean Tirole is the winner of this year's Nobel Prize in Economics. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much.